Tēnā koutou, I'm Selwyn Manning and you are watching Tech Now. And tonight we are joined by technology commentator Sarah Putt to discuss the big tech issues of 2020. And they include five major points: the performance of the telco networks, working from home. Sarah asks, have you thanked your IT department yet? Cybersecurity under DDoS attack, new Privacy Act passes into law, with an attachment there, 27 years to update on that one, and also the fifth point, big tech wins. But before we discuss these topics, here's an invitation to those of you who are joining us live. If you are joining us via Facebook, Twitter, or YouTube, do feel free to make comments, because if you do, we'll be able to include your interaction in our program. Okay, so let's cross to Sarah, who is waiting online to get into these issues. Tēnā koe, Sarah.
Good evening, Selwyn. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Very good. So how are things in your world, in the tech world today? I understand there's a sad thing to note at the front end of the program.
Absolutely. I did want to acknowledge a cordial announcement today that their former CEO, Scott Bartlett, lost his battle with brain cancer. And sadly, he passed away. He was only 40 years old. And he was one of the really great people in telco and tech in New Zealand. He will be known to some as being a very young CEO when he took over Orcom, after it was sold by its founder, C.B. Woodhouse, to Kordia. And he was only in his mid to late 20s, and he took the position with such vigour and energy, and he was very, very innovative. And he was also, I knew him primarily through being a journalist, and he was always open to new ideas, open to discussion and engagement. And I think we're all poorer for his passing, and my heart and my thoughts go out to his family, and rest in peace, Scott.
Yeah, well said, Sarah, well said. Let's try and make this a good program and dedicate it to him.
Absolutely, that would be lovely. And you know, our first of the list, and you mentioned it, about when we look about the top five, it's people like Scott that enabled things like the ultra-fast broadband, because he was in a challenger telco position 10 years ago when all of this came up, and the legislation passed to change the market, the sector, separate the incumbent at the time called Telecom, and create a fibre network by investing what seemed at the time a huge amount of taxpayer money, $1.5 billion, which has since risen a little bit over time. But I think we all saw that it was an amazingly good investment for New Zealand, and an example of, when done well, big infrastructure projects like this, and this is one of the biggest we've had in New Zealand, can reap huge rewards in the short, long, and, you know, short, medium, and long term.
Yeah, let that be a lesson to us right now, where infrastructure spend, development, et cetera, is really going to be one of those key planks on the New Zealand economy as we lead into this next 18-month period. You watch that space, that infrastructure, and you mapped it out so well, Sarah. I mean, even from a technology point of view of what we are doing this evening, it wouldn't have been possible prior to the UFB rollout. And so, you know, and also, you know, all of those tech companies that are trading globally with you know, the aid of technology and things like that, assisted by a stable network. I heard a story only yesterday from Cindy Baxter, and it was online, and she was saying, she's out, you know, Piha way, as I understand it, but she was saying that you know, she's having real trouble getting a stable connection. You know, Chorus apparently has laid out the UFB close, but it just needs those connections to come through, and they've been having real trouble with their ISPs getting that last bit or to leverage, you know, Chorus just to finish off some things. So it's just frustrating for a lot of people. They just want to get up and get going, yeah.
Oh, absolutely. And I had a look on Crown Infrastructure Partners. They've just put a briefing to the new minister, you know, as they do when the new government bought. And they said that 83% of the population is covered and 86% will be covered by 2022. And that's, you know, a good set stat. But to your point, if you're not in that stat, it can be frustrating.
Yeah, if you're outside the footprint, it's tough.
It is tough. But the other thing about the UFB, and one of the reasons why we were able to come through COVID, was it sparked with other investment as well. And one of the things that I think about is the Pacific Fibre Cable, which, the Hawaiki Cable, I apologise, it was the Hawaiki Cable, which was as our second international, really true international cable, as in it goes up to the States and back, and that's pretty much, you know, where we need to be connected. And those founders of that cable have just announced today that they're looking to build a massive data farm down in Invercargill, taking advantage of the electricity down there, and obviously with TY Point closing down. There'll be a lot more electricity available on the grid, as it were, and they're looking at that investment. I mean, that's just the sort of thing that you can start enabling once you start going, okay, we're going to be serious about a massive piece of infrastructure that's going
and,
to benefit.
And that is such a lifesaver to people of that region, considering, you know, Rio Tinto pulling out down in the bottom of the South Island of New Zealand. Also from those that want to stay in their communities, that they may have people, you know, in their family that are at high school age, and they're thinking, well, we want our family to be together, but we've got no way of keeping it intact when there's no opportunity beyond the beginnings of employment. So, you know, these kind of things are huge solution-orientated answers to the current problems, aren't they?
They are. And whilst this won't employ the same number of people as TY Point, it's a start, obviously to start with, because they've got to build the thing. Yeah. I mean, this thing's going to take more about the same electricity as Palmerston North does. You know, it's power and power.
But remember, like, you know, with Dunedin, it's a different kind of thing, of course. But when they were talking about the gigabit community, Gigatown, all of that type of thing. And look what's spiraled out from that, you know, opportunity, thinking, just looking at what can we do with this. And you get a sense that when some commitment with respect to infrastructure that is a part of a regionalised solution, perhaps in some ways to you know, be located, and then all sorts of things map out from that. It's great news to hear. It's got to be applauded. You know, a lot of people say journalists just moan and pick at things, but man, these things are good.
They are good. And we sometimes I feel as a journalist, we have to throw a bit of tough love in there to get things going.
I suppose it helps elevate our self-importance up a few notches too. So the other point here is we were just talking about the performance of telco networks and the justification of UFB, ultra fast broadband, and we can see that investment paying off in all sorts of areas. You know, you can also imagine, you know, what could happen in the other end of the country, like in the far north, and embracing some of these technologies once it really starts to reach into the rural sectors properly. That'd be so exciting. The other thing is, the second point I should say we're going to be talking about is working from home. Have you thanked your IT department yet? That sounds very top end of town, Sarah, IT department.
Well, I mean, as you know, my day job is as editor of CIO in Computer World. So I talk to people who run IT enterprise for their organizations, public and private sector, all day long. And they've all said to me, you know, they all worked so hard when the lockdown came, and they had 3 or 4 days to basically enable all their workforce to work from home. And that's obviously people who are fortunate enough to have roles where they could work via technology and computers and connectivity and all the rest of it. But it certainly helped so many organizations stay on track and keep the economy chugging along for some time. And just to acknowledge the work that they did, and also the fact that it was under quite difficult circumstances. Not only did they have to worry about things like cybersecurity, which we're going to touch on in a minute, they also had to get the actual physical stuff, like the PC market sales just roared.
Your notes that you sent me kindly say smartphone sales fell.
They did.
That's a reversing of the trend. Yep.
Because we thought that, you know, we all just needed to go mobile, but we can't go anywhere. You need your PC, right? So there's 217,000 PCs were sold between April and June. And one of the things that contributed to the shortage, of course, was the Ministry of Education's scheme to get as many devices as it could to students and households without connectivity and without proper devices.
And 17,000.
17,000 at least were distributed, and that didn't help with supplies. But goodness, what a great thing that was too, because hopefully, even, you know, if we have to go into another lockdown, and touching wood that we don't, at least we're starting to get those students in the who are on the wrong side of the digital divide connected and learning online, because that really is where they need to be.
Yeah, certainly makes a difference. I understand that, you know, this whole transition has been really so difficult for so many people, and particularly those from the lower socioeconomic areas are finding it really difficult to connect. So the digital divide challenge really has presented itself in this COVID year 2020, and one would hope that we continue, you know, huge efforts to actually find an egalitarianist kind of approach to equaling out that unlevel playing field, perhaps. So, but what the, just once again to acknowledge, you know, that's a little bit of the stick, but the carrot stuff there, the, as you were talking about before, the Ministry of Education, that's fantastic work, isn't it? You know, and it's certainly something that, you know, I think this country could be very proud of in some of these initiatives that have developed.
And we just have to keep going, because as we always say, we all have to rise together. So it is really important that is, I think, I feel like that is as an issue on the agenda now and is being picked up by many quarters. Internet New Zealand, for example, put out a big digital divide paper, got it signed and backed by a number of organisations. And so those sorts of things that together will hopefully, you know, keep that issue to the fore.
Yeah, and you know, this whole thing too, hasn't it been about really, you know, can we, it's the can we do something, you know, can we work from home, can we actually interconnect from our homes? Yes, we can, and then what are we going to do with that? You know, and I get a sense that that technology that is supporting a cultural shift of trying to actually make something of 2020 has been something quite exciting to observe. And I know I refer back a bit to what we're doing here, but it's really standing out to me that the technology advancements that are coming out of Europe, the United States and England and Australia and New Zealand and many in the Southeast Asia communities, China itself, People's Republic of China, all around the world, the new technologies, and particularly in the modular kind of area where you can bolt this on, you can bolt that on. There's been, you know, syndication kind of models that have been developing for the last decade. It's all coming into shape. And like what we're doing here, this is kind of a lot further on than, say, a Zoom kind of call or a Skype call. The technology that we're using in this particular thing called eCam Live is amazing technology, and really you can see, you know, remote broadcasting, webcasting or device casting and whatever we want to call it is really in the hands of a whole new generation, I think, going forward from here. So they're huge things to perhaps place into a context around the 2020 year, despite the challenges, despite the economic concerns and the instabilities that we've all been experiencing. The tech sector is really stepping up to the mark and trying to, you know, fill the gaps that have been developing here.
Oh, absolutely. And I would just say that, you know, so because I talk to a lot of IT leaders, I would just say that they've all just said that everything's accelerated. Everything, you know, one of them said to me today, it's no longer about being perfect. Perfect's out, fast is in. We've shown that change can happen at pace and people can accept it. But it's the social
Just on that point, that's so true. You know, like in setting up the instincts and setting up this particular type of bulletin where we would go live, yeah, and also self-record and go to, you know, the social media platforms, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter. It's challenging getting onto LinkedIn at the moment, but, you know, those four are, you know, all simultaneously. So the technology's fine in that way. But, you know, coming back to that point that you were making about, you know, these kind of new kind of technologies in this particular space, there is just so much more that is to it. With that, look, I'm probably repeating myself and apologise.
I think what you're saying well is, if I can jump in. It was one of the things that I've noticed about 2020 as well, is the power of the individual when it comes to tech. It's really enabling it. And as we're both, you know, media people, you know, one of the things I've noticed is just these new platforms, Substack, Patreon, and there's another one called OnlyFans, which basically is subscription-only content.
Yes.
So you all individual, independent creators of their work, a journalist who might have created a following around their work, able now to monetize by themselves. Yeah. They don't need to be part of a big organization, a big magazine, a big masthead.
In that way, it's like a shift, like what we saw with the content that was available, perhaps through more, you know, dodgy means back in the late 1990s into the early 2000s. And then it was legitimized by the likes of, you know, iTunes, etc., and many of the other platforms. So people were able to purchase, and then so a lot of the pirated stuff fell away, you know. And I kind of see the changes here as being like that once again, you know, that the innovation, talent and things like that can be presented, can be marketed by the person as an individual. You know, it's breaking down those big walls that used to be there. You know, you see and reflect and culturally in a lot of the songs of those major artists and from the 70s even, you know, like Elton John, those big names, but they're writing about the problems they were having with their managers to actually get songs done, or once they realised they had talent, being basically locked in a room, you know, for days and days on end, not allowed out until they've come out with five songs. You know? So it breaks away all of the shackles of all of that. And getting back just in one point there, Sarah, about, you know, about the being perfect out of the blocks. And this is the thing that's come out of the United States and culturally in the tech space, you know, it's really standing out. And they're saying, don't wait to be perfect before you actually go live with your projects. You know, get them out there. You're only going to get perfection by being out there and doing it, you know, and that's the message that they're saying to all of these generation of young people that are switching on to being able to cast out with a quality and also put their you know, their creativity around it. And I'll just, you know, my creativity is not to flash, but I'll just do that with a transition. We'll come back to our third point. So welcome back. We're just showing off, you know, that you can do. Imagine you can do anything if you've got these platforms. You can do anything. So we're coming up now to, you know, one of the big challenges of 2020 was cybersecurity under a DDoS attack. New Zealand really faced, you know, was looking down the barrel of really some sophisticated attacks, wasn't it? Only a matter of months ago.
Yes, absolutely. So unfortunately, because, you know, we got noticed and this part of the world did, and Australia, New Zealand, and suddenly we became the victims of huge amounts of cyber attacks. And there was a lot of concern with the working from home around the phishing, malware, those sorts of things, because people were working from home, they were stressed, they were concerned about other things, and they kind of didn't think about things like scam emails, phishing, that kind of thing. But the really headline-grabbing cyber attack happened to the NZX, to our stock exchange, when it came under a DDoS attack, which is a distributed denial of service. And basically, they just, it's a volumetric attack. They just basically pound the networks, the site with requests and overwhelm it with traffic. Yeah. And they can't, they're just shut down, they're frozen.
And for people out there that don't know what that is about, those DDoS attacks, it's like, basically machines that create this huge matrix as if it's people accessing a particular site over a short period of time. So instead of having, you know, depending on the scale of the site, it might be, say, 1,000 over a few minutes, they'll just throw thousands and thousands and thousands per second. That's the kind of thing that New Zealand was being confronted with, the stock exchange was being confronted with this year, on a scale of which we hadn't seen before.
And it was very, it wasn't just as if it was attacking the website, it was attacking anything that was on the network, zeroing in on any vulnerability. And it's a real tricky
one. The Internet of Things kind of things, everything like that, they're scouting around for.
It was other organizations that may or may not have been the victim of the same people. The idea was around ransom, so they would send pretty much a ransom note and say, we'll stop if you pay us. Don't do that. You know, the government was quite clear, the agencies were quite clear that you shouldn't do that, but you can understand if people needed to. I don't think the NZX would have, because of its relationship as our stock exchange. But then the government and the stock exchange, which didn't really say much, feel very limited in what they can say, because that when they talk to ordinary people like you and me, they're also talking to the cyber criminals as well. So it was a really quite a tough situation, and it really was a wake-up call to everybody.
Yeah.
The Australians came out and said, look, we're going to spend a huge amount of money. I think from memory it was around $1 billion or some massive amount anyway, around recruiting 500 cyber experts to deal with
this. Yeah, cyber security experts,
yeah, so to deal with this situation. And there was a little bit of concern in Australia and in New Zealand that, you know, oh my goodness, all the talent's going to go over there. Suffice to say that cyber security experts talent have always been in short supply, and continue to be. It's a tough world out there in cyberspace. But even for those of us just working from home or just, you know, doing our own thing, don't stint on the cybersecurity is my advice, is everybody's advice. Get your two-factor authentication where you can. Make sure you got your right passwords. All that basic hygiene, really, just you just cannot and have good antivirus software. Just do all that stuff.
And even when you do, some things go wrong. One of the sites that one of my servers was hosting for another party, through some way, spammers got into that partition for that particular website and spammed. I noticed, you know, the shell that you bring, you know, you have your shells up of the servers. I noticed one was running very hot. Had a look at that, and it was too late to stop the email blacklist sites from listing the server number, that server IP. But we're able to get on top of it within hours and get it out. But, you know, it's so easy for it to happen if you just drop your guard and, you know, yeah.
And even if you don't.
Security.
Yeah, and even if you don't. So it's definitely worth the investment. And to your point, you know, you can never guarantee 100% on anything. The next one, did you want to pop to the next one, which was the privacy?
Yeah, sure. You're leading the show here. It's quite cool. No. And our new Privacy Act passes into law 27 years to update. Tell us about the last part of that.
Yeah, so it's been, so the second sort of, the Act came in on the 1st of December, and it's their sort of second iteration of the Privacy Act. And I was quite surprised to see 27 years gone through. We're actually only on to our third Privacy Commissioner. They've all been excellent.
Must be a good job.
Well, I think that they just really enjoy the whole, I think they just really enjoy the whole topic. It's fascinating because you're not just dealing in New Zealand, you're working globally. You know, you're working, you know, the topics that they tackle and they wrestle with are not really, they're not just related to what's going on in this country. They're across the world. It's and the same as everywhere.
It'd be fair to say that our Privacy Commissioner is pretty good.
Oh, I think so. And the one before him too, Marie Shrove, she was excellent as well. They've really got a handle on the situation. And, you know, to the point where I was talking to the person in charge of the IT around health, the health response to COVID. And he said it was fantastic when they're developing things like the contact tracing app. The Privacy Commissioner and his office were right there alongside them, you know, working with them to ensure that, you know, New Zealanders can feel confident that this is a tracing app, not a tracking app.
That word confidence in the Privacy Commissioner, the Office of the Privacy Commissioner, it seems like the public does have confidence in them because they've gone into bat for so many people and so many organisations that could have been overwhelmed by other more towering ones, and also has been an advocate for the issues and ideals of privacy. And I noticed when the, you know, the COVID, you know, the scanning app, the COVID, where is it?
The Bluetooth?
Yeah, yeah, and when the update came last weekend or earlier this, yeah, last weekend, and it came up and it described what was happening and why, you know, blah, 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 and you can opt in if you wish, things like that. Because it had the Privacy Commissioner kind of thing, I thought, yeah, okay, bang, done.
Well, he's not afraid to, you know, have a go if he feels it's necessary publicly. And I think that's given people, you know, and not just him, his whole office, he's got fantastic people working with him as well. And I think he's really shown time and again his independence and his willingness to go, you know, to your point, to bat for and advocate for better measures for people.
The Ombudsman's office is very good too, just as a side tangent.
We have got when you think what happens in other countries, possibly, we do have a lot of high confidence in our institutions, and long may that stay. But anyway, the next one is just to briefly talk to you about the Act, what the changes are. Couple of things: organisations and companies will have to mandatory report breaches, privacy breaches. That's mandatory.
$10,000 fine, is it?
It's $10,000 fines, which is not much.
I mean, compared to the Europeans.
Yeah. The Europeans, if you are in breach of a Privacy Act over there, of what they call the GDPR, you have to pay either 4% of your global turnover, or what did I put down here? $34 million, whatever.
New Zealand dollars. Yeah, and also that relates to anybody anywhere around the world. As a company, if you're kind of reaching into the European Union and you're in breach of that GDPR, then you can suffer these kind of consequences. So it's a big deal. Oh. New Zealand also, I think, has followed that part of the model, that this is relative to any company that engages in New Zealand from overseas. Even if they don't have an office or a physical presence in the country. So it's quite robust, isn't it?
That is correct. There are some things that aren't as robust as the GDPR, but you're absolutely right. So those are sort of the three main things. One is mandatory reporting. The second is the fine. So he's got a bit of a stick now. And the third is your point, which is that, you don't have to have an office here. If you are, if you're working, if you have New Zealand customers who are New Zealanders, then you are liable.
Now, big tech news, Sarah, big tech issues.
I wanted to say big tech wins because, from an economic standpoint, we have seen, globally at least, just a massive rise in tech. The big five, Apple, Facebook, Amazon, Alphabet, which is Google, and Microsoft, which is called GAFM now. They always have these different sort of acronyms.
What is it again?
GAFM, G-A-F-A-M. I mean, I've heard FANG, I've heard other ones, but this is GAFM. GAFM, together, collectively, are worth more than $4 trillion American dollars. And I don't even know how many zeros that is, but it's a lot.
You start speaking over a billion and it kind of becomes just a sea of numbers, doesn't it?
Huge.
A lot. It sounds like a massive vacuum cleaner to me that's soaking up the values of everybody around the world.
Well, it's just, and that is why the American government, the Congress, and the latest one obviously is last week, this announcement that FDA, I think it is, the government and about 46 states are actually taking Facebook to task. They've put a lawsuit in claiming monopolist behavior through the purchase of Instagram and WhatsApp.
On that point, some of the viewers to this may recognise that, with Facebook, it's under pressure to divide up those companies like WhatsApp and Instagram away from its mothership, if you like. And that may be why, over the last 2 months, you saw a convergence with the message systems of Instagram, Facebook and WhatsApp. And there's some speculation in the United States that is strategic on behalf of Facebook to try and make it more difficult to break up into three separate entities.
To break them back up again. And, Facebook will say, well, you let us do it at the time. There's all sorts of arguments. It's going to be a massive lawsuit on the level which we haven't seen since Microsoft in the late 90s. So it's going to go for years. But it feels like that the American politicians, the Congress, are quite strong on wanting to proceed with this. And I guess the fact that they've got just the federal organization, but also the states involved as well, certainly brings a lot more, heft to it. And of course, the other thing that's happened is that Google has, the Department of Justice over there has had a go at Google for its alleged anti-competitive behavior by convincing smartphone manufacturers to ship with their already there.
And close to our shores, the Australians are making huge advances into trying to get Google to pay for content of which it is trawling through and making money out of and not paying anything back to the producers of such content. And understand that, you know, New Zealand government is on its radar as well. So it'll be interesting to watch that space in 2021. Also on the facts of how do governments like New Zealand actually develop and sharpen its taxation gathering from
that restaurants. One's been around for a while.
They're determined. There was a communication that came out of it only, last week or the week before? Not that long ago anyway, from New Zealand government saying that it's basically, if you boil it down, I'm paraphrasing here, it was basically saying it's getting impatient with the OECD measures going on that, and there's too much compromise New Zealand is determined to get something happening, preferably through OECD, but if that's lagging, then through its own means, so. You go.
Well, that's when I'm sort of thinking I'm getting a little bit cynical because it's been a long time. Yeah. So we need to see some kind of action on that.
Yeah. All I'd say is that, you know, you've got a government that needs tax take, and it certainly needs to stop the capital flow going overseas and try and maintain its domestic economy. So all of the requirements are there for legislative change, and it's also a second term government now, and it's this kind of thing that they can sharpen their teeth on.
Yeah, and obviously we will continue to, to look at what those policies are and to, you know, to advocate for better networks and also for fairer approaches to tech. But also I think as well to applaud and to recognise our tech companies who stay here, and I'm thinking about companies like Fisher & Paykel Healthcare who are a really great example of a tech company that's done the hard yards and is out there creating massive R&D in New Zealand, helping other businesses, you know, building that ecosystem and staying true to the country. So they've had a really good year because, of course, they're in healthcare, and that's where they've got great tech, and that's where they've really seen their share price go up. And they're, last time I looked, and it's probably even more now, they're worth have a cap of $19 billion, which is huge for a New Zealand business.
Yeah.
Other businesses that have done really well are SaaS, which that whole software as a service. Pushpay is an example. They basically create payments for evangelical churches in the US. Mm-hmm. And then there's other companies like Vista, who have done incredibly well, but unfortunately they're in a sector that has borne the brunt of COVID. They do software for cinemas.
Yeah.
Outside of China, I think they've got more than 50% of the market. And goodness, they've had to pivot and pivot and pivot this year, and they've really managed to keep their business, you know, trying to get through these difficult months, and not helped by announcements by companies like Warner Brothers, who basically said they're going to go direct to streaming in the next, all their big blockbusters are going to go direct to streaming in the next 12 months. But, you know, that's the way it goes. You know, you've got to hang in there, and good luck to all our tech companies. Yeah.
I get a sense that 2021, 2022, you wait to see the intellectual property develop in the tech sector from those small groupings of individuals that are hyper-intelligent. They're really, really at the front end of their game. They can identify niches. They've been sitting there and seeing opportunity, perhaps, in which they thought they had 2 years ago, evaporate because of the COVID pandemic. And you wait and see. I think there's going to be a whole lot of amazing stuff to talk about and to embrace and to actually use and to get on board with in the next 12, 18 months' time. Be something to see.
Absolutely. And I feel that, you know, it's good to have and good to sort of encourage the vision that people have in our sector, because these jobs that are created are high paying jobs, and they're good jobs, and they're ones that all our community should have access to. And what's really interesting and what's been good as well, just if I can end on this note, when I looked at the high tech awards and some of the winners there, we're starting to see, and we need to see more, Maori and Pacifica developers, because they bring a whole new perspective to the industry, and they're so connected to Aotearoa New Zealand that part of things really needs to be encouraged. And you can see places doing that, and more, please.
Isn't that great? Let there be more. Okay, Sarah, that's 2020. Look forward to your company again in 2021. To those who are watching this program, thank you for your company also online. We really look forward to developing this kind of project and taking it further in 2021. So until then, have a great Christmas. Have a safe holiday season. And just what else can you say apart from take care?
Thank you.
Oh, take care, Sarah. Bye.